If you ask the best in the world the single greatest secret to success, they'll smile and give a gentle laugh. You're asking the wrong question. Being extraordinary is not a single element. It cannot be distilled down to one thing. We're told that being a success is a magical thing that happens in a place you'll arrive. The hard part is that this long-held truth is the biggest lie. Extraordinary features humans that have reached the top of their field and become extraordinary humans. The door to being extraordinary is now open. Will you walk in? What is up, everybody? Jeremy here. And guys, I am super stoked for today's guest. We have Dave Asprey, the founder of Bulletproof and the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Bulletproof Diet. He is a Silicon Valley investor and technology entrepreneur who spent two decades and over $1 million to hack his own biology. Dave is also the creator of the widely popular Bulletproof Coffee, host of the number one health podcast, Bulletproof Radio, and author of the New York Times bestselling books, The Bulletproof Diet and Headstrong. You can find out more about him and his brand new book over at AspreyGameChangers.com. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life show, Dave Asprey.
Super happy to be here with you.
Absolutely, Dave. I'm really stoked as I have started every morning for the last, I think, 5 years of Bulletproof Coffee. And I'm stoked to learn more about your story, man.
You and me both. just had mine this morning.
Very cool. The thing I got to ask is, how does an MBA go to one of the biggest names in health? It just doesn't seem like it lines up.
It's really funny. My real background is in computer science, information systems, and something called decision support systems, which is a subset of artificial intelligence. So I worked in Silicon Valley for a very long time, working in deep tech. I was a co-founder of a part of the company that held Google's first server when it was wow. Two guys and a computer. And that whole time, you learn how to manipulate complex systems in a way that they wouldn't teach you in medical school, because it's this weird environment on the internet where you need to have control, but really everything between you and the other person is owned by all these different companies. There's all these unknown variables, yet it still has to work. And it turns out most of medicine is unknown variables. So I started hanging out with anti-aging researchers and joined a nonprofit almost 20 years ago. And I've been president or chairman or board member for almost two decades now, learning from people three and sometimes almost four times my age who were doing things that were supposed to be impossible biologically, yet somehow they were pulling it off. And at a certain point, this just became my passion, in part because I weighed 300 pounds, in part because I was having cognitive function problems in my mid-20s, and I felt really desperate. So this was my nonprofit work. This was my passion, and you could say my hobby. And at a certain point, I just felt I call it almost like a moral obligation to share this knowledge, and partly a little bit of anger, because if someone had told me this when I was 20 or 25, it would have radically changed my life. Much of this knowledge existed back then, but it wasn't evenly distributed and it wasn't out there even when I was looking. So for me to be able to write a blog about this, that wasn't meant to become a company, just to share what I knew, that was what motivated me to do it. And it ended up becoming Bulletproof.
Very cool. And I just find it impressive, like how much weight you lost in that time. And I guess the thing I would have to ask you, Dave, is one of the things you said there about is challenging the impossible. Is that something that, you know, has been like a guiding light for you? Like you want to challenge things that people say you can't do?
I actually was diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder when I was young. So
wow.
That must be a part of what operates me. But it's funny when you look at what people who achieve really big world changing things with what they have in common. I studied this. I studied this for 5 years over the course of Bulletproof Radio, and that's the topic of Game Changers. What do all of these people do? What do they agree on? What do big clusters of people who've cracked this code, what do they do in common? And one of the 46 laws that emerged from all this quantitative and interviewing kind of research was that they actually don't even use language like the word impossible. What impossible really means is it means that no one's done it yet. And you could say it's impossible to light a light bulb. It's impossible to, my favorite, It's impossible to drive more than 30 miles an hour because it'll suck the air out and you'll all die. This was this was the automotive revolution. And wow. Of course, someone did it. Like, look, I didn't die. It's impossible to fly. Someone did it and they didn't die. And so everyone who says impossible, they're just traumatized, small-minded people. I can tell you that looks really hard. We don't have the technology or knowledge. And given what we know, it doesn't look like there's a path to doing that. But the given what we know is the problem. You go back 20 years ago, we didn't know what mitochondria were. Well, maybe we did a little bit, but we certainly didn't understand that they're the puppet masters of our brain and our biology the way we do now, which is my last book. And so what I wanted to know in this arc of being an author and a podcaster and, of course, a CEO and a nonprofit guy and the things that I do, I wanted to know, okay, how do you get your body working? So the easiest thing to do is have a really healthy mom. My very first book was on fertility. It's called The Better Baby Book. And it's what you do to have healthier, smarter kids. If you get that start in life, you have such an unfair advantage. Talk about building superhumans. It's what your mom ate before and during pregnancy. That's the seed. And then the next book, what do you eat so your meat works pretty well? That's the Bulletproof Diet. 500,000 copies, 16 languages, and New York Times bestseller. But then Headstrong. Okay, now my body works. How do I make my brain work? Because you can have abs and be tired and cranky all the time. And Headstrong really was profoundly transformative for me, because if you want to learn how something really works, you write a book about it or you teach a class on it. So now I've really got that dialed in. Okay, now I've got this energy. I'm 9.6% body fat on my last scan last week on the $26,000 scale I use here.
Wow.
That does all that stuff. It's great to be a professional biohacker, right? But you go through all that stuff. What do you do when you have energy, when you need an hour or two less sleep to feel refreshed, when you're actually performing better than you did when you were 10 or 20 years younger? Well, you could apply all that extra energy to things that make a difference, or you could flop around and eventually, if you're lucky, figure out what to do, or you could just learn from the masters. So I interviewed Nobel Prize winners. I interviewed these experts, people who have invented new fields of psychology and biology, and people who have done great changes in the world philanthropically, and said, what do they have in common? And so sometimes I'm teaching the audience about, here's the latest in nootropics, and here's how you can do this to your biology. But then at the end of that interview, I always ask the same question. If you could offer three pieces of advice for someone who wanted to perform better at everything they do as a human being, and everything includes relationships, health, it includes everything, what would you offer? And when you find out how these ultra-successful people, success not being measured in dollars, but being measured in impact, what do they do? What do they all agree on? What do they disagree on? How do you tease that out? That is what I needed to know that for myself to be able to go to the levels where I'm going.
Well, one of the first chapters in your book is about the idea of focusing on your weakness actually makes you weaker. And I'm kind of interested to see how, you know, you applied that in your life and how you've kind of found that related to a lot of the people you studied.
It's one of the most important laws in the book. And when I say the book, this is Game Changers, the new book that's just on Amazon right now. And what you'll find is that most entrepreneurs, I'm going to say most, just based on a non-scientific sample size, but the ones that I've worked with on neurofeedback and just the ones that I've personally coached, they were bullied. They're still responding to this. I've got something to prove. Like I don't want to look like I failed or something like that. And I had that in spades. So in the first 30 years of life, if I knew I sucked at something, I would say, I got to take a class in this. For instance, project management is not my strong suit. So what did I do? I decided I was to become a certified project manager so I could address that weakness. And what you find is there's an ROI, and this is how I run my life now. There's a return on investment for everything you do. There's an ROI for what you put on your plate. There's an ROI on the media you consume. There's an ROI on the minutes you spend meditating or sleeping. How do you get more back with less energy or less time? And focusing on the things that you genuinely suck at has a very low return because the investment is very high in terms of energy and time. So what works is you must go out and do the things that are necessary to meet your mission, even if you're not very good at them. But the people who really really make a difference at the highest level, they figure out how to partner with people who like and are energized by the things that would make the other person weak. And so what do I do now? I hire good project managers instead of trying to be one myself. And if someone had just told me that, look, it's okay to suck at something, you have to understand it. You have to have the tool set to achieve your mission, but that doesn't mean that you have to execute each of them with excellence. Just be good enough at the stuff you suck at until you can outsource it.
So how do you find that level of self-awareness though? Because I feel like a lot of people, you know, they may realize they suck at something, but they're not actually going to do something about it, you know? So how did you, I guess, develop that level of self-awareness to see that?
Well, I didn't have any level of self-awareness about this other than just sort of being pissed off and unconsciously feeling inadequate about those things until I started doing the hardcore personal development work. I'd done all the stuff that was supposed to work to make me happy. By the way, in Game Changers, the three big buckets that the world's big impact people do, one of them is be happy. Happy people perform better. They have less friction in their life. So they just get more stuff done, stuff they want to do, stuff they care about. So for me, I made $6 million when I was 26. I lost it when I was 28. And I can tell you, I was no happier when I had the $6 million. It was nice and it felt good and all, but my core happiness didn't shift a bit. I actually told a friend, I'll be happy when I have $10 million, which is like the biggest a-hole comment I could possibly make when I look back on it now. But I believed it at the time, and the people at the company where I was, most of them had made ungodly amounts of money, and most of them lost it too when the company crashed. So I had this nice experiment to do that. And one of the other laws in the book is that not one of the 450 world changers I interviewed, when I asked them three most important things, not one mentioned money or power. The people who do big stuff, they're not doing it for that reason. And I cite research in Game Changers in that law about how much money does buy happiness. And it turns out that the average household income in the US is almost exactly at the level that the research found, around $74,000 for a household. And what that says is that if you make another $1,000 above that, it doesn't increase your happiness. It might increase comfort, and it's certainly nice, and it's wonderful to be able to make even a little bit more money. And we all know that. But the story in our heads about happiness and money is not true. And the people who have a big impact, the people who change the game, they don't believe that. Mm. And by virtue of not believing that, they do better. So for me, I started doing personal development work. I did holotropic breathing with Stan Grof, the inventor of transpersonal psychology, the entire field. He's 94 now. He's been on Bulletproof Radio. I've done an event with him. And you do this altered states work. I fasted in a cave for 4 days and went through a lot of personal development transformation. I went to Tibet and I learned for about 3 months, Nepal and Tibet, and I learned meditation from the masters. And so self-awareness is critical. And if you look at the universe of people who made it onto Bulletproof Radio, who were at that bar, almost all of them meditated or had some other personal development practice. And there's a law that comes out from the book. And no one who reads the book is going to do all 46 laws. You're going to find the two or three that resonate with you using the exercises in each law and say, you know, I want to put my effort here because I'm going to get the highest return for the lowest investment. And once I've achieved that, I'll do it. And one of those laws is get outside yourself. Whether you want to do that or you want to do Vipassana or fasting, there's many different techniques, breath work, that let you just step outside your day-to-day awareness and look back on yourself and say, I didn't know that about myself. I think I'll work on that. And for me, that's what helped me get there. But I'm not alone. Maybe I'm just crazy. I'm a professional biohacker. I inject stem cells in places no one's ever done. It's that level of self-awareness that matters. So it puts you outside yourself and all of a sudden you just gain awareness. That's how it happens.
Well, that kind of brings me around. It's a perfect transition to where I wanted to go with this. And that's that you said that being rich won't make you happy, but being happy may make you rich. Like, how have you seen that function in the people you've studied?
Well, this is law 33 from the book. And the title of it is Wealth is a Symptom of Happiness. And this is written in 48 Laws of Power style. And it's great because Robert Greene, who wrote that book, has been on Bulletproof Radio. And I credit him for inspiring the format of the book. And That law reads, happy people are engaged, productive, and successful. You must focus on what makes you happy today because being happy unlocks a new level of potential in everything you do. Happiness makes it far easier to change your circumstances, your neighborhood, or maybe the whole world. And the idea here is that when you're happy, even if you have nothing, when you're happy, the amount of energy it takes to pick up one foot and put it in front of the other, to make the call, to close the deal, to ask for the funding, to get your first customer, to write the first line of code, to write the first line in your book, or just to wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to be an awesome parent. It doesn't matter. If you can make happiness happen inside your brain, inside your biology, the investment required for every action you take that day is far less. And that means you have more to work with and the amount of friction and struggle goes down. So when you realize happiness isn't correlated well to money, certainly above that $74,000 number, it isn't. If you're not feeling happy about things, maybe you work on that and you'll just notice, wow, suddenly it was a lot easier to make money. I went to work and I wasn't exhausted at the end of the day. And that's a massive secret that no one talks about. And I think it's really important.
Well, that viewpoint shift is just incredible. Because I know even in my own experience, like however you look at things, like the energy you put out there is what you're going to pull back. And I think you don't really realize that until you actually have experienced it.
And in Game Changers, I talk a lot about that. But what I don't do, because this isn't a book just for entrepreneurs. It's not a business book, although many entrepreneurs will read this and benefit greatly. And I've interviewed people like, you know, Peter Diamandis and Tony Robbins, and I've used, you know, their knowledge in the book and sort of that sample size, a large sample of highly successful people to figure out, all right, maybe if just Tony does it, maybe you don't want to do that. But if Tony and 20 other people do it, that's a pretty good sign. And frankly, if just Tony does it, you might want to give it a shot. He's one of the world's best, right? Certainly, I would give him the benefit of the doubt on that one. And I've been to his events and all. So it's one of those weird things, though. When your mindset shifts like that, The investment thing is it's hard to express.
Sure.
How deep of an impact it's had. So I don't want to pigeonhole this for entrepreneurs, but they're probably the ones who put out the most energy. So they're the ones who have to do this the most. And as a rule, they're the most unhappy group of people, other than perhaps doctors or lawyers.
What do you think is the biggest thing that you took away from putting together Game Changers? Because, you know, creating something like this, I'm sure has to change your own viewpoint. Like, what did that do for you?
I decided to write this book for two big reasons. One of them is that to really learn something, to crystallize the knowledge and the way my brain works, I build 3D pictures of how things work. But you've got to take the time to go through the information, go through the data, go through the knowledge and structure it so that you can see how it's interrelated. And when you write a book, it forces that. So there were about 6,000 hours of prep work that went into doing these interviews. So
wow.
There's 500 hours of Bulletproof Radio interviews. Each of those requires, you know, 4 to 8 hours of prep work. And I've been doing this for 5 years, 100 million downloads. Like it's a huge undertaking for me. But then to go back and go through every transcript, hire a statistician to go through and statistically measure, okay, how many people did this? How many people did that? And to have the judgment to say, since we'd all use the same language in an interview, to sort of bucket those things and to boil down these 46 laws, that work was incredibly precious because now they're locked into my operating system. And that's what it did for me.
Mm. Well, Dave, I want to kind of bring this back down to you just as we're running low on time here. And if we could take a look at, you know, something you believed at 21 that you don't believe now, what would that be?
One of the things I believed at 21 was that I'll call it the myth of the lone wolf inventor, entrepreneur. And I genuinely believed, just due to circumstances of my birth and my upbringing, that no one was here to help. Like I was going to have to do it all by myself. So you sort of get this rigidity, this armor, this invincibility that you really desperately want to believe. What I didn't know was that people are wired to be kind and helpful to each other. It's the fourth mitochondrial behavior. It's wired into every cell in our body thousands or at least hundreds of times. And what that means is that when you ask for help, shockingly, you're likely to get it. It's just that so many of us won't ask for help because we think it might make us look vulnerable or weak or unknowledgeable or like we just might need help. And I had that programming in spades. It turns out that it is amazing to be able to help people. And I'm an advisor or investor in a good number of startups now, and I've coached a lot of entrepreneurs. And it turns out it feels really good to help people. And I've had the great fortune to have people who had no economic or any other incentive to help other than they said, you know, I really like what you're doing. Let me help. Guys like Rick Rubin, the famous music producer, reached out one day and we had lunch and he made a couple phone calls that helped to get my first book out. So I look at all of the work I'm doing with Bulletproof, which is out there to make the world a better place, as just coming from hundreds of people who didn't have to help, who wanted to help, who did it. And it's that gratitude is also a major focus of the book. It's, if you can't feel gratitude for the fact that you're living in a world where so many people want to help you, even if it doesn't feel like that, they actually do. If you can turn that on, the amount of investment in your ROI just goes way down. All of a sudden, things feel good. You're happier.
What would you say is your biggest skill set and how do you feel you developed that?
That is a really good question. It's probably, I mean, it's hard to say. It's probably disruption is my biggest skill set. I look back at what I've done in my career. The very first product ever shipped over the internet, or not shipped over the internet, but sold over the internet, the first e-commerce before there was a name for e-commerce, was sold out of my dorm room in the early 90s. And I was in Entrepreneur Magazine wearing a double extra large t-shirt and this big red puffy face. And it was a t-shirt that said caffeine, my drug of choice. And you look back in the early history of internet e-commerce and all, that was disruptive. The company that held Google's first servers was the company that started the cloud computing revolution. And I have the poster on my wall here in my office from the very first provision and pay-as-you-go service. That was my baby at that company. So it was nowhere near as successful as the modern cloud computing things. You know, I mean, look at Amazon doing $27 billion in AWS revenue. Nice work, Amazon. But to be there early and to know when things are changing, what's happening right now, big food is being disrupted as we speak. And Bulletproof is at the forefront of doing that. And there will come a day 5 or 10 years from now where we just as a world wake up and say, what are we going to do with all this corn? It's not very good food for anyone. It's bad for the soil. It's bad for the planet. Let's stop this. And that's the scope and scale of the disruption that's happening for Bulletproof. And most people aren't disruptors by nature, but I think that might be my core thing. If that wasn't it, it's communication. And the deal is I know why I'm here and I'm willing to invest into the skill set to let me do this. And this is what I want Game Changers to do for people who read it, is figure out what's the skill set you invest in. I taught for 5 years at the University of California. I ran the program on how to teach working engineers how to build the modern internet. And I taught because I sucked at teaching and I realized being able to stand in front of a room and explain complex things was really important. I was terrified the first time I went on stage 20 something years ago at this group called the Web Guild down right on Great America Parkway in Silicon Valley. And I became excellent on stage. I became a great teacher. I became a great writer, even though the first piece I ever wrote for money was rejected and they didn't want to pay me. That was for the Miami Herald, by the way. And so like all of this, those were core skills. And it turns out I'm fantastic at those, but I was afraid of them and I wasn't very good when I started. Those are things I learned. And for people listening, you can learn those things. But if doing those cost me energy and I hated doing them, I would have someone else do those for me and I'd be doing something else.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the thing about the Miami Herald, by the way. I've written hundreds of articles for different sites. And the very first one I wrote, the editor said it was the worst thing he had ever read. So I totally understand where you're coming from there.
I remember this lady, Rosalind Resnick. I was the first reporter who kind of discovered my early e-commerce and wrote about in the Herald. She hired me to help write technology articles for her. And my very first one, she said, Dave, I should spike this article. I said, I don't even know what that is. And she said, that means I tell you it's so bad I'm not paying you. But because I like to help, I'm going to teach you how to write. And she did. And I'm still thankful to this day. She went on to start Net Creations, which sold for $250 million almost 20 years
ago. Wow.
One of the first internet marketing companies. And I could have been a co-founder of that if I wasn't so egotistical and insecure at that age. But oh well, I'm happy where I am now.
Well, Dave, just as we're wrapping up here, I just have two final questions for you. And the one being, what's the biggest thing you struggle with?
I don't believe in struggle. If you learn to accept failure as something that is beneficial, that it's a data point, you can do things that you don't know how to do and you can fail abjectly and publicly, but you can do it without struggling. So struggle is the pain you feel from learning how to do things. It's possible to learn how to do things and just completely suck at it and do it over and over without feeling the pain of struggle. So I work very hard in my life, if I recognize that I'm struggling, to say, I'm not going to struggle. I'm just going to do it and fail. And that difference, that mindset difference, is one of the things that's in Game Changers. But I would say there are things that are hard for me, but I don't struggle with them. I either do them or I don't do them. And I do them maybe pretty poorly. But if I do it without pain, it doesn't cost me very much.
Well, Dave, just as we're wrapping up here, if we could take a look far in the future and you've achieved everything you want to achieve and you've created, you know, this big movement and you could sum up that legacy with a quote in your tombstone, what does that look like?
It's kind of funny. I don't care about my legacy. I want to make the world a better place, but if when I die, the only people who have anything to say about me are my kids, you know, my family, I'm completely good with that. I am not doing this for the public eye or the accolades. I never have. I tried that, by the way, that first article in Entrepreneur Magazine when I was 23. It felt good for 15 minutes to have my little 15 minutes of fame. It didn't make me any happier. So I chose to become a public person because what I'm working on is so important that I'm willing to do it. But I don't care what it says on my tombstone. By that point, I should have something more important to do in my next life.
Very cool. Well, the book is Game Changers. Dave Asprey, thank you so much for hanging out with me today. Where can we find that book and where can we find you online?
You can buy the book anywhere books are sold. Certainly Amazon has it. Just search for Asprey Game Changers. And if you go to aspreygamechangers.com, I am gifting as prizes $175,000 worth of cool biohacking stuff, including 20 different people getting stem cell procedures or other biological upgrades, Juve lights, Aura rings, Butcher Box subscriptions for grass-fed meat, and all kinds of cool stuff. The biggest giveaway I've ever done, because this book is that transformative for people who read it. It's many lifetimes of knowledge all boiled down into 4 hours of reading. So AspreyGameChangers.com.
Very cool. Well, Dave Asprey, thank you so much for hanging out with me today on the Create Your Own Life show.
It's been a pleasure.